Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 6th of August, 2020, the 75th anniversary of the dropping of the first atomic bomb on Hiroshima. Happy anniversary, everybody. Is that allowed to be said? Probably not. I'm glad I said it. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. Yes, it is the 75th anniversary of the dropping of the atomic bomb that led to the end of the World War, the Second World War, as they say. This is still controversial as such a joke, and it's a real indication of just how screwed up the politically correct mindset is. Oh, did we really have to do it? It ended the war, didn't it? Well, yeah, but what about the innocent civilians? What about the American soldiers who didn't have to die because of it? Okay? Given our enemies, whoever those enemies happen to be, and us, I'll take any amount of them over one of us. That's not right. You're not supposed to say that. I know. Oh, no. What about the children? What about? Yeah, okay. Well, Japan didn't surrender right away, did they? The devastation of Hiroshima was only matched by the devastation of Nagasaki on the 9th. So they looked at those sweet women and children whom they'd sworn that they would, you know, fight to the last man, woman, and child of. And they said, 50,000 of them, one bomb, one day, one plane. Meh, no big deal. It took another one for them to go, oh, shit, I guess they're serious. Okay, we surrender. So don't give me this, we didn't have to do it. Sure, we didn't have to do it. We could have fought for another couple of years and invaded island after island and sacrificed American after American. Or we could have said, look, we're not screwing around. We dropped the bomb. And then we said, we'll do it again. And they said, no, you won't. And then we did it again. And then we said, we'll do it again. And they said, okay, we quit. They didn't know, of course, we couldn't do it again at that point, that we were out of bombs. But that's beside the point. It was the smart, strategic thing to do and the humane thing to do. Well, soldiers are different. Human life is human life when you're dealing with war. Japan was not a saint during World War II. In fact, they were on par with Nazi Germany in their treatment of people who were not Japanese. The racism of the Japanese Empire is often forgotten. But bring it up with somebody from China, bring it up with somebody from Korea, and see how they respond to telling you the history of the treatment by the Japanese of those countries' inhabitants when they invaded. So, yeah, we were not dealing with rational people then. And in fact, it was Emperor Hirohito who had to overrule the military. The military was like, no, screw it. City, couple cities blown away. Who cares? The emperor finally said, enough. So, yeah, we're not dealing with rationally thinking people back then. It was a different time. Nowadays, we couldn't win World War II. We'd be out of World War II. After Pearl Harbor, the American left in this country now would be taken to the streets saying we had it coming. Well, you know, we did cut off their oil supply, and they were heavily dependent on our oil to be able to continue their killing machines. So they had every right to attack us. That's how screwed up the left is. Forget the fact that it's a generation of wussies right now who would be of draft age, who wouldn't know what to do with it. They'd end up soiling themselves and being less tough than the French military. But that's beside the point. Anyway, happy anniversary. And, you know, when Harry Truman said it was one of the easiest decisions of his presidency. If you think about it rationally, yes. Do you want to kill 100,000 people now, or do you want 200,000 people to 1 million people to die over the next couple of years as we battle endlessly in this war? Well, we can just do it now. Let's do it now. So rip that Band-Aid right off. This is how the left thinks. They hate this country, so they hate anything that worked in this country, that's effective in this country, that's good in this country, including and especially you. Anyway, I'm not going to talk about it anymore just because I just talked about it. I just like rubbing it in because there's that pearl-clutching class out there going, oh, we did such a horrible thing. We did such an awful thing. Yeah, you know, Japan started it. Don't want none, don't start none. There you go. You don't start none, you don't get none. They started it, we finished it. We could have finished it the long way, but it was better this way because it saved American lives. And back then, anyway, most of America, all of America, certainly easily a majority of America, cared about Americans. Now, it's about 50-50. Half this country just hates this country and hates everybody in this country, including Oprah. Oprah, the victim. We'll get to that in a bit. And we got Joe Biden going on. God, Joe Biden. Joe Biden is... I see why he's hiding in the basement. But we're also going to be joined for a little bit in a while by Kyle Scheidler. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Who is an expert on Antifa, knows the history of Antifa, and testified this week before the Senate about Antifa. And it'll be very interesting chat because the mainstream media doesn't bother. They didn't even bother covering the hearing. Democrats barely attended the hearing. They came out and defended Antifa and then ran away. And you should know the history of Antifa, the story of Antifa, the goals of Antifa, and the tactics of Antifa. So we'll get that from somebody who knows Antifa inside and out. But we're going to talk about Joe Biden's, I don't even know what to say. It's amazing that they let him do any interviews. The only reason they let him do any interviews is because they have to do some. They're all softball interviews. And even he strikes out at softball. He whiffs just bad. Not even a foul tip. A whiff. It's a joke. But first, let me tell you about Life Change Tea. You go to getthetea.com. You choose your flavor of Life Change Tea. You throw it in the cart. You enter promo code Derek. Click apply. You get free fast shipping. What is Life Change Tea, Derek? Well, Life Change Tea is the tea that'll change your life. It's the tea that'll make you go. It is. Look, your body, you're not, I'm eating right. I'm living right. I'm getting enough sleep. I don't know why I'm dragging by the middle of the day. Well, it's because you're not digesting the food, or the nutrition from the food that you eat. Old food, caked on the inside. Yeah, you could shove a garden hose up. Don't shove a garden hose up there. But you could wash yourself out all the time. Or you could drink a cup of delicious tea a day. And that will clean you out naturally from the inside. And suddenly, boom, you're feeling so much better. You got more energy, more pep in your step. You're making it past your bedtime. What's going on? That's because of Life Change Tea. You're able to get the nutrition out of the food that you eat. And that does a body good, as they say. Go to getthetea.com. Check your flavor. You brew up like a month's worth of it. You drink a cup a day. Follow the instructions. Don't overdo it. And you will notice a difference in your energy level. Don't forget to enter promo code Derek at checkout and click apply to get free fast shipping on top of a great deal for a great product. Okay. Let's talk about Joe Biden. He gave a softball interview to CBS News. And I mean, these are tap and putt interviews. Yesterday, we talked about the Axios interview with the debate, I guess you could say, with Jonathan Swan and Donald Trump. President Trump stayed right there with him toe-to-toe. Joe Biden, the wheels fall off in the starting blocks. He has no idea where he is, what he's doing, why he's there, what's going on. He was asked about his mental sharpness and whether or not there's a decline. There's no doubt that Joe Biden is in decline. Joe Biden is in decline. He's 77 years old. Would that we all live that long or longer? But by then we will not be let's just say, in the running for the National Spelling Bee, if you're putting together a professional Trivial Pursuit team, you're probably not going to go for the septuagenarians or the octogenarians. You might be tempted to think, well, you know, they lived through a lot. Maybe they'd have a lot of experience. They'd have a lot of knowledge. They will. But if you're playing a game with a timer, not really the quickest draw. That's just nature. There's exceptions. Don't send me emails about how sharp your grandfather is. I believe you already, but we're talking about on average. And Joe Biden is slipping more than most. He seems to have the mental acuity of your average 90-year-old. He can't remember where he is half the time. He comes out and thanks people for showing up to a place that isn't the place. You'd think you'd be acutely aware of your surroundings if you're aware of anything, but then again, you're not Joe Biden. Now, in fairness to Joe, he never really did bring his A game. He brought, on a good day, a B-plus game. You know, back in 1988, he had to drop out of the presidential race because he was plagiarizing Neil Kinnock's biography. Who plagiarizes somebody else's biography? Your life is the easiest thing to remember. And you got to use somebody else's life to make your life more interesting. How insecure, how small does your penis have to be that you have to plagiarize somebody else's life? But he also had a problem with the truth when it came to his own life. I've written a column about this. I'm going to write another column. I wrote a column about it back in 2014, I think maybe even 2012, called Our Idiot Vice President. And it was all about Joe Biden's lies about his own life. Now, since then, he's written not even more chapters. He's written a second and third volume of lying about his life, saying that he was arrested a bunch of times. He was arrested trying to go to Robben Island, which he called Robben's Island, from Soweto in South Africa, trying to visit Nelson Mandela, even though geographically Soweto and Robben Island are on opposite sides of the country. It's like not at all remotely close to convenient or logical that he would have done that. Turns out he wasn't arrested. He was just detained for a second by security, not even taken away, if that part of the story is even true. Nothing about Joe Biden's life is true. He said he graduated at the top of his medical class or his law school class. He didn't. He was at the bottom. Said that he got a full academic scholarship and was the only person to get a full academic scholarship. And he didn't get a full academic scholarship. Things like that. Said he won awards that he didn't win. Everybody's the hero of their own story. But most people's story is based somewhat in reality. Joe is not based in reality. I suspect it has to do with a couple of things. I think he's genuinely dumb. And second, he had two aneurysms, which means he had brain surgery. And people I know who've had brain surgery, I've floated this idea before. People I know who've had brain surgery, once they've had their skull opened up, it changes them. They're different. Not in a bad way. They're not drooling idiots or anything, but they just, their personality changes. They become more loose with the truth and reality, just a not nearly as firm a grip on reality. I don't know if there's anything scientific to back that up, but that's been my experience in dealing with, in watching Joe Biden and dealing with Max Baucus, who was a senator from Montana, when I worked for the other senator from Montana, and he'd had a motorcycle accident where he had to have brain surgery too, and apparently changed. This was before I met him. And a girl I dated had an aneurysm pop in her head, and it, had it not happened in a hospital, she probably would have died, but they were able to save her, and she was different afterwards. Even she acknowledged she was different afterwards. But then again, Joe Biden is naturally dumb, so it could be a great many number of things. But Joe Biden was on CBS this morning, yesterday, and being interviewed, and the idea of him taking a cognitive test to see if maybe he is losing a step came up. And Joe made the case. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I'm trying to think of a way to sugarcoat it. Joe made the case. I'm going to play the whole exchange, and then we'll talk about it afterwards.
Have you taken a cognitive
no,
test?
No, I haven't taken a test. Why the hell would I take a test? Come on, man. That's like saying you, before you got in this program, if you take a test where you're taking cocaine or not, what do you think, huh? Are you a junkie?
What do you say to President Trump, who brags about his test and makes your mental state an issue for voters?
Well, if he can't figure out the difference between an elephant and a lion, I don't know what the hell he's talking about. Did you watch that? Look, come on, man. I know you're trying to goad me, but I mean, I'm so forward looking to have an opportunity to sit with the president or stand with the president in debates. There are going to be plenty of time. And by the way, as I joke with him, you know, I shouldn't say it. I'm going to say something I probably shouldn't say. Anyway, I am very willing to let the American public judge my physical and mental fitness.
There's a lot to unpack there, so we're going to go back through it in a couple of bites. But it is, you got to love, by the way, the questioner, the reporter, is a black guy. So he's asking, there's Mr. Whitey asking a black guy, are you a cokehead? You a coke fiend? Do you recognize any of the signs, Joe? You should be pretty good at spotting a coke fiend, considering you raised one in Hunter. So, you know, are you saying something? Should the executives at the network be concerned about this reporter's penchant for booger sugar? You want to, something you want to tell the class? I love how, no. Well, wait a second. Before we go back through that, you just heard Joe deny that he'd ever taken a mental acuity test. Why would he? Well, let's hop in the Wayback Machine, shall we, to a crazy time. It was 5 weeks ago, June 30th, 2020. Doug McElwain of Fox News asks the vice president, the former vice president, whether or not he'd ever actually had a test to see if he'd lost a step. And Joe's answer was, let's just say, different back then.
Last question, real quick. Some have speculated,
that you
are subject to some degree of cognitive decline. I'm 65. I don't have word recollection that I used to have. I forget my train of thought from time to time. You got 12 years on me, sir. Have you been tested for some degree of cognitive decline?
I've been tested and I'm constantly tested. Look, all I got to do is watch me, and I can hardly wait to compare my cognitive capability to the cognitive capability of the man I'm running against.
I've been tested and I'm constantly tested. Except for 5 weeks later. No, I haven't been tested. It's a different test. I don't know what. Maybe it was a COVID test. Is the cognitive test the one where they shove the Q-tip in your nose? Or is it the one where they stick your finger in their butt? Or their finger in your butt? Or somebody else? I have my finger in somebody else's butt? I don't even know. He doesn't know where he is half the time. I test it all the time. I'm not tested at all. What's funny is, upon noticing this discrepancy, shall we say, CNN decided they had to step up. As, you know, each member of the left-wing media takes their turn at the plate, they have to step up and make sure, like, oh, geez, Joe Biden said something stupid today. Who's going to be the one to take one for the team? And more often than not, it's CNN, because CNN is a load of crap. CNN's story on this very discrepancy, the wording is wildly interesting. The headline, Biden clarifies he has not taken cognitive test. We clarified it. Did he? He said the exact opposite of what he'd said in the past. Now, that's a clarification. It's weird, because that would be a lie if a normal person had done it. If a Republican had done it, God forbid, it would be a total lie. If Donald Trump did it, all presses would be stopped. CNN would go with 24-hour coverage. They'd have aerial coverage of the White House, just in case. They'd have a drone up there. I'm not talking about one of their news reporters or conservative commentators. Not that kind of drone. Well, kind of that kind of drone. But you'll let me, Biden clarified. He clarified it. Yeah, the exact opposite. Were you in town the night of the murder? Were you in the house the night of the murder? No, I wasn't in town or in the house the night of the murder. Okay. 5 weeks later, were you in town and in the house for the night of the murder? Well, yeah. Yeah, it was. See? Hey, wait a second. Well, I'm just clarifying my position before I feel as though my previous answer may have been muddled a little bit, what with my lying about it. God, it's hilarious watching these people, but it's sad because there's a segment of the American public that this works with, right? There's a segment of the population who goes, oh, well, all right, now that he's clarified, I get it. And that's not a clarification. That's a lie. One of them is a lie. Either he's tested all the time or he's never been tested and doesn't know what he's doing there. You can decide for yourself what it is. I remember remarking at the time when he said he's tested all the time, I said, the only reason you test somebody all the time is if there is a problem and you're trying to monitor the problem so that it doesn't get so far out of control that it becomes a massive, massive problem that maybe you need to be institutionalized. So anyway, let's go back through the first bit of Joe Biden's Q&A on his what turns out to be a total lie.
Have you taken a cognitive
test? No, I haven't taken a test. Why the hell would I take a test? Come on, man. That's like saying you, before you got in this program, if you take a test where you're taking cocaine or not, what do you think, huh? Are you a junkie?
What do you say?
People slipping into dementia before they're aware of it get a little testy with the people around them because they're frustrated. What do you mean? What do you mean? I don't have a, I'm not forgetting things. I'm not saying this. No, you're the one. You're the problem. It's a sad part of the reality of the mysteries of the brain. I'm testy all the time. You'd think I was slipping into dementia, but I clearly am not with my razor sharp mind. And then to accuse the guy, what are you on cocaine? Would you take a test if you were on cocaine? Well, you know, to be honest with you, Joe, if my employer thought that I was snorting the booger sugar, I'd happily take a whiz quiz to point out how I'm not on cocaine. How I'm not friends and hanging around with your son, Hunter. You want to talk about cocaine? I said, why do I look like Hunter to you, Joe? Is that what's going on in your brain as the hamster running in that wheel slowly begins to limp uncontrollably? And you think, well, that's the part that people are going to focus on. It's he told a black man and he on cocaine. That's the thing that the Republicans are going to try and make hay out of. I'm not really sure that and the discrepancy between, yeah, I'm tested all the time to, no, I've never been tested. I don't think the cocaine thing, unless you really want to go at the Hunter angle, is the way to go. And I think people will forget about this because the media just blows past any Biden gaffe anyway. In there's so many Biden gaffes that by tomorrow there will be another one to focus on. But there's other parts of this that are just as bad, if not worse. There's no good part of this exchange for Joe Biden. None whatsoever. His quick, pissy temper swiping out at the guy who dared ask him a question that there's no way this sneaks up on Joe. A, he's already been asked about it. And B, if his team is at all monitoring the media coverage of him, they know that this has at least been mentioned, this possibility, usually couched as Republicans are claiming that Joe Biden is missing a step. And then there's the Democrat journalist going, but there's no evidence to support that. Nothing at all. I mean, for God's sake, CNN said when he lied, he clarified. So it doesn't. But this should not have surprised Joe that this would be an issue. Next time it comes up, will he be as testy? Maybe. We'll see if his team coaches him up a little bit more on it or if he even remembers that this had happened by the next interview. I suspect it'll be a while before there is a next interview. But what he says after that is just as, if not even worse. Just as bad, if not even worse. Here's where it goes.
Are you a junkie?
What do you say to President Trump, who brags about his tests and makes your mental state an issue for voters?
Well, if he can't figure out the difference between an elephant and a lion, I don't know what the hell he's talking about. Did you watch that? Look, come on, man. I know you're trying to goad me, but I mean, I'm so forward looking to have an opportunity to sit with the president or stand with the president in debates. There's going to be plenty of time.
What in the hell was that? I am very forward, much looking. Are you suddenly Yoda, but drunk Yoda? Who speaks like this? Who questioned dare my mental fitness work job thing? Man, come on, man. His crutches, come on, man, that buys him time. Some people say, or just sit there silently. Barack Obama was a big, false start sentences. Joe Biden's buying time is, come on, man, or when he does recognize that he's going off the rails, which clearly isn't all the time, he throws a, come on, man, out there. Like, come on, man, I'm very much forward-looking to being standing, sitting, kneeling, playing Parcheesi with, wait, who are we talking about again? Yeah, Joe, you're on the ball. I don't think you're on the ball, Joe. I think the ball hit you in the head and did some brain damage. Oh, but he wasn't done. It gets even better.
And by the way, as I joke with him, you know, I shouldn't say it. I'm going to say something I probably shouldn't say. Anyway, I am very willing to let the American public judge my physical and mental fitness.
I'm reading the end of it. That's all, folks.
Okay, maybe that's not how CBS ended the interview there right at the end, but they might as well have. I'm perfectly willing to let the American public deal with my physical and hell, I don't know. You can't say the word fitness. You need three runs at it, Joe. You need three runs at that word while you're trying to claim that you have the mental capacity to be president of the United States. It couldn't have gone worse for him. Well, it could have gone worse for him. I suppose he could have stopped in a confused manner right in the middle of it. So I guess they should be thankful for that. Points for plowing through, Joe. But not many. Not many. It's a bad case to make, Joe. It's a tough case to make. That you've got it. I've got it. I'm very forward much looking to thinking that. Are you a jumble, sir? Are you now or have you ever been a jumble? Anyway, that's your presidential candidate if you're a Democrat. And you really do have to sit around going, this is it. This is the best we could do. There were 700 Democrats who ran for president. That really were. They couldn't get them all on stage. They couldn't get them all on two stages over two nights. People were left off the debate stage. And they're going, this is it? This is what you come up with? This is who you are. Congratulations. You win or you got Joe Biden. You decide whether or not it was a win or a loss. I got my own ideas. Speaking of winning and losing, man, the Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. He wants to make sure the lucky winner is one of his top supporters. So be sure to enter soon because this is an opportunity you do not want to miss. This offer is only going to a select group of supporters, and you're one of them. All you have to do is text my name, Derek, to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's Derek, D-E-R-E-K, spelled properly, to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years. Amen. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. Oh, man. Every day it just gets a little more bright, doesn't it? Joe Biden, my mental, you're questioning my mental capacity? How dare you question my mental capacity? Why, I challenge you to a duel, sir. It's not 1754 anymore. Are you sure about that, Sonny? Did I ever tell you about the young black kids who like to pet my leg hair? Yeah, you have, Mr. Vice President, and please don't ever mention that again. You sure? You working for Corn Pop? You wanna go out and tussle in the garage? You wanna meet at the monkey bars after school, kid? Because I'll beat you up. Soon as that bell rings in third grade. Wait, what year is it? Who am I? Why am I here? Your Democratic nominee, ladies and gentlemen. Now we shift gears and we talk to Kyle Scheidler, who is an expert on Antifa. He testified before Congress on Tuesday. And he is the director for Homeland Security and Counterterrorism at the Center for Security Policy and an expert on Antifa. So a big hat tip to my friend and former guest on this podcast and fellow podcaster, Liz Scheld. Seek out her podcast and check that out. Liz Scheld, for hooking me up with Kyle.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, as promised and delivered from the first half of the program, well, delivered now, promised in the first half of the program, we're joined now by Kyle Scheidler. He is the director and senior analyst for Homeland Security and Counterterrorism at the Center for Security Policy. He's also an expert. Antifa was up on Capitol Hill the other day testifying, or as much as you can testify before Congress these days when Democrats have no interest in the topic at hand. Thanks for taking the time, Kyle. How you doing?
Oh, I appreciate it, Derek. I'm doing pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah, all things considered. And that's the thing, is you've got to consider all things now. I got to ask you, first off, about the scene down there. Because Democrats were like my three-year-old daughter going someplace where she has to be quiet. They didn't have much interest in a hearing about Antifa, at least on TV. I imagine it was more palpable in the room. What was the scene like there?
As you say, it was not quite a hostage video, but they definitely did not want to be there. And to the extent that they wanted to be there at all, they wanted to talk about what they wanted to talk about. And they were not interested really in staying on the topic or looking into the question of Antifa really at all.
They really have no interest in it. And I say all the time that they're the militant wing of the Democratic Party. They're the brown shirts. But you made an interesting point in your opening statement yesterday that Antifa, they say they're anti-fascist. But, well, I'll let you make the point. Say what Antifa considers fascist, because Democrats might think that they're at least useful idiots at this point. But there's a question as to who the idiots really are in that equation.
Well, they are definitely useful. The Democratic officials who are giving Antifa top cover are definitely useful. That much is true. But Antifa views, first of all, the entire country as inherently white supremacist, inherently fascist. They view capitalism as inherently fascism, right? This is the old Marxist line coming out of the 1930s in the Spanish Civil War and all that stuff, where fascism is just late stage capitalism kind of stuff. So they believe all that. They believe in overthrowing the government. They have an anarchist streak, so they really believe in overthrowing all governments.
So they are useful to the Democrats right now, but if they had their druthers, they'd overthrow the Democrats too. The Democrats are just, they don't differentiate, because we see, you know, they go to the mayor of Seattle's house and protest out there, when nobody could have been more collegial to the rioters, the CHOP or CHAZ or whatever the hell they were. Citizens, they could not have bent over more backwards, the government there, yet that wasn't good enough. And there is no friend of Antifa, is there, at least in the Democratic Party?
No, if you are not engaged in their particular brand of militant anti-fascism, you are ultimately an enemy. You are either side by side with them in the black bloc, or you are in their way. You know, good example of this, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler goes out to hang out with the crowd, and he could not have been more accommodating to them. And they still basically chased him out of the area physically. Yeah.
If he didn't have armed security with him, I'm not sure he would have made it out of the area. But he comes out of that
and he's still deferential to them.
Why do you think that is? You know, you understand Antifa. I don't know if anybody can understand the Democratic affinity towards it. It's not necessarily love, but is it just the enemy of my enemy is my friend? Is it something that basic, or is there something deeper going on there?
No, you see, when you have no difference in principle, you can have no resistance in policy, right? So all of the logic of Antifa, that the country is inherently white supremacist, right? That cops inherently target Black Americans for essentially murder, which is an obvious falsehood and nonsense. But these sorts of assumptions about the country are accepted at a principle level by most of the Democratic Party today. And so they have no ability to object to Antifa on that very basic principle that the country is not white supremacist, and therefore they are powerless to defend themselves against Antifa, because Antifa will say, well, we're rioting against this federal courthouse, but that federal courthouse represents white supremacy. And if you're a Democrat and you come out of the new left school where everything is white supremacy, you know, you're a follower of the New York Times 1619 Project, you don't have any basis to argue against that claim. And so you're helpless. And this is their goal. That's their goal, is to slowly bring people onto their side because they are unable to resist the inherent logic that opposing them is fascist and opposing them is racist.
And sadly, that is there are far too many people receptive to that because of 1619, which is yet to be taught in schools, but is planning to be taught in schools. But all the groundwork, all the fertilizer for that seed has been laid for a couple generations now in the public school system. But Antifa, most people think, well, Antifa is relatively new, and maybe in name it is relatively new. But the organization and the mentality has been around for a very long time. People remember, is this what became of the international answer back in the Bush administration when there was an anti-war movement? They were very communist, very left-wing, very violent people, and they'd plaster their posters around. I remember seeing there's going to be a rally every Saturday on the mall because of Bush's war for oil, and it was international answer and a couple of other groups that seemed to have... Maybe they lost their shine, or did Antifa overtake them, or did they just change their name? What is the root of Antifa?
Well, Antifa is actually even older than that. Go well back beyond the days of the arguments over the Iraq War. Go all the way back to the 60s and the 70s. With the Students for a Democratic Society and the Weather Underground. And if you read the early Weather Underground stuff, Prairie Fire Manifesto and these other sorts of things, you get very immediately this sort of language that we're familiar with today, that the country is white supremacist, that all Black Americans are oppressed and need to rise up. And it explicitly comes out of that. Now, going into the 70s, the Weather Underground splits. There's a faction called the May 19th Communist Organization.
Oh, they're really good at names over there. God, they come up with the worst names.
The nice thing about it is they tell you exactly how they feel. The reason why they picked May 19th is because it is the birthday of, I think it's General Dieppe, it's Ho Chi Minh. It's Ho Chi Minh's birthday, and it's also the birthday of Malcolm X. And that's how they settled on May 19th. So these May 19th guys are engaged in armed robberies and bombings well into the early 80s. And they have a front group called the John Brown Anti-Klan Committee. And the John Brown Anti-Klan Committee, which had chapters across the country, is essentially the Antifa of its time. And in the 80s, you're starting to get the punk rock movement, and the John Brown Anti-Klan Committee works with and merges some of these punk rock guys to chase out those that they view as white supremacist in the punk movement, right? And this is the birth of what was then called Anti-Racist Action.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys spread all throughout the Midwest and the West Coast, a little bit to the East Coast as well. And they are essentially Antifa today, right? They do what Antifa does. They target anybody they disagree with as a fascist, and they punch him in the face, right? and there are today still a major one of the largest Antifa groups in the country, a group called Torch Antifa, which I mentioned in the testimony. One of the leaders of that group is one of the early founders of the Anti-Racist Action and was a member of the Weather Underground and this JBAC. And that's really important to understand, because if you think that these guys are young gutter punks who don't know anything about politics, they don't know anything about political organizing, they don't know anything about insurrection or insurgency, you're wrong. They have a very good understanding of their history. They still have ties to these guys who have real world experience in revolution. And they are able to enjoy the networks that were created out of that. So, for example, as Senator Ted Cruz mentioned in the hearing, this woman, Susan Rosenberg, who was vice chairman for a group called Thousand Currents, which was the fiscal sponsor for the Black Lives Matter global movement. This is the group of, that was founded by the three women that described themselves as trained Marxists, right? Mm-hmm. So Susan Rosenberg was a convicted terrorist and a member of the May 19th Communist Organization. So she is heading the group that is the fiscal sponsor for Black Lives Matter. While Black Lives Matter describes themselves as heirs to Assata Shakur, Assata Shakur is a cop killer and terrorist. Yeah. From this period, she was broken out of jail and helped to escape to Cuba by no other than the May 19th Communist Organization. So you have a very tight network of people who have a history from this period, from this radical period, and they're still operating today.
But Kyle, these groups that you mentioned, and I've heard of some of them, and I've heard of Assata Shakur and knew that she'd escaped and fled to Cuba and is still there and is still praised by the left. These groups have always seemed kind of fringy, whereas now they're maybe I just didn't notice before, maybe they didn't get any coverage before, but have they grown significantly in size in recent years?
They grew in stature. So, you know, gals like Susan Rosenberg go from prison after being pardoned by President Bill Clinton to, you know, a chair on one of these major foundations that takes a lot of leftist money and moves it around. Or Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, head of the Weather Underground, you know, get really plush teaching positions and play a major role, actually, in pedagogy in the United States for the next 30, 40 years, right? Bill Ayers is essentially an educator and a guy who works on education curriculum. So you've got a guy who is literally a terrorist bomber who has been setting the curriculum for kids and college students in the United States for the past 30 years. And so you're curious as to why this stuff came out of the campuses? They were on the campuses. These guys went, the ones who bothered to get arrested at all, they went straight from jail into academia and began recruiting and training the next generation. And that generation recruited and trained the next generation. So we're now looking at multiple generations of people who have been raised to hate this country, who have been raised on revolution, and who today, more than ever, see an opportunity to put into practice what they were taught.
One of the things I always warn people about is you can dismiss Antifa as just a small group of people, but a small group of people committed to a cause have wreaked havoc throughout all of human history. You know, the other people sit around and go, well, they're not serious, or, you know, the communists were not a majority in China, and Chiang Kai-shek had most of the land, and a small group of Maoists managed to take over the whole thing. It never underestimate the power of a small group of people. But conservatives for a very long time looked at what was at least the breeding ground for Antifa on college campuses and said, well, once they get out into the real world, that's when they'll learn. You want to see something funny? Watch these kids go for their first job as they're protesting everything under the sun and mad all the time. Reality will get them. It doesn't seem like reality's getting them. Am I wrong in that? It seems like they're changing reality in a lot of ways.
I think that's absolutely right, Derek. I mean, look at the laundry list of corporations that have just handed the keys to the kingdom over to these guys, giving them millions of dollars in many cases, giving them endless free propaganda.
Do we know where that money goes, by the way? We don't seem to have any idea how much money is being raised or where it's going, because it sure as hell, I would think that maybe just for PR purposes, they'd say, here's 25 grand for a reward to find the killer of this one-year-old child in Chicago, you know, just from a PR standpoint. But they don't do that. They can't be bothered with even trying to win PR victory. So they're raking it in. Where's it going?
I mean, it's going to a lot of different groups. I mean, some of them are straight up grifts. Some of them are hardcore revolutionaries. Some of them are even Antifa. Good example. I mentioned one of the, you know, pro Antifa websites that claims to be media, a group called Unicorn Riot. And they're one of the recipients of this money coming out of Act Blue. As, of course, are a number of these Marxist Black Lives Matter guys. Now, some of that you could maybe chalk up to ignorance. You know, Black Lives Matter sounds like a pretty good proposition. I think nobody wants to disagree with that, especially if you come from the American perspective that all men are created equal. But that's a very different thing than the actual organization led by actual self-described Marxist revolutionaries that you're putting money to. And that's assuming you can even track it, because a lot of it goes to, as I said, these fiscal sponsors. And then it just straight up disappears, right? Even from, because what happens is if you start a 501c3, but you haven't had it passed by the IRS yet, you get a fiscal sponsor who somebody's already got the designation. And then all they have to do is record that they gave you the money. And it doesn't get recorded what you did with it or where it went after that. It just disappears. and so this is a pretty common tool that they'll use in order to get around that kind of stuff.
That's a hell of a racket. Here I am working for a living like a sucker. So tell us. What is their goal? Because if you just look at them, it doesn't seem like they really have a goal except to sow discord. Everybody grew up in high school or in college knowing somebody who called themselves an anarchist, which was just their excuse for being an asshole. And they eventually grew out of it. But they talked a good game about they want to bring about change. And then they grew up. These people don't really articulate much of a vision except for they want to tear down the police, tear down the existing system, destroy buildings, destroy property. They just seem to want to keep people angry for the sake of anger. But there has to be more to it than that. What are they working toward? Because they seem to be, like, if I'm at a riot or if I'm at a protest and people start throwing bricks, I'm leaving, right? Just like if I'm at a protest and people show up with carrying swastikas, I'm leaving. Like, this isn't what I signed up for. I'm out of there. For some reason, a whole bunch of people are sticking around watching people throw bricks. Maybe they're not physically doing it themselves, but they're perfectly fine with, oh, there goes another Molotov cocktail. So what is it that they want that people seem to be seduced by?
So 2 points, the first being the people standing around. Antifa is really good at working with other groups. They've got a number of allies in the broader protest organization community. And on the left, there is it's even above a policy. It's a principle of what they call diversity of tactics, which means you don't criticize somebody else's protest. So you may be there just to hold a sign, but if they're there to throw a Molotov cocktail, who are you to say, right? That sounds crazy to you and me, but this right. stuff is really, in the protest community, absolutely carries the day. And you'll see signs and advertisements when they're going to have a riot. You'll see diversity of tactics, on the poster, or you'll see a popular one, no peace policing. which means if you're a protester and I'm a rioter, you don't try to stop me from rioting. Antifa will even have other protest groups sign memorandums of understanding, essentially saying, as a protester who's going to be present where Antifa is present, I promise not to take pictures of them that they don't want taken. I promise not to call the cops. I promise not to rat them out. I promise not to try to stop them from doing anything criminal. And this stuff, I mean, this happens. They sign this stuff and they go along with it. Because if you look at this situation with this, you know, these riots and everything, they started with George Floyd, right? And everybody was pretty much united. That was pretty bad. And we need to investigate this. And there may need to be some, you know, action taken against this particular cop. Maybe there needs to be some kind of reform of this particular police department, or at least an investigation to see if this stuff is endemic, that kind of thing. And most people were pretty on board with that. And then you have multiple nights of rioting. They burn down a police station. And all of a sudden in this country, we're talking seriously about abolishing the police. And people are publishing op-eds in major newspapers about the need to abolish the police. And you've got Nancy Pelosi calling federal law enforcement stormtroopers. And so the violence of groups like Antifa helps move the needle. So even if you aren't all the way where they are, you take political advantage by their behavior because they push the envelope, they move the Overton window so that you can accomplish a lot more ground than you would have otherwise accomplished through reform. And that is the devil's bargain that groups make with groups like Antifa.
After having testified about this, Kyle, do you think that Republicans underestimate the seriousness of the threat of a group like Antifa, or do you think they get it?
I'll be honest with you, Derek. I would think that Republican senators got it a lot more if they had shown up to the hearing. Now, admittedly, it was pretty late in the afternoon by the time they got to our panel. But Ted Cruz was the only Republican senator who showed up for our panel. And that was really disheartening. The Democrats stuck around to ask a few questions of their witnesses and to sort of generally criticize the notion of the hearing at all. But there was very little interest by the GOP in trying to understand what's going on with Antifa, trying to understand the organization as it is. You know, I was hoping for, you know, some kind of question, even if they weren't willing to go along with my analysis. And I think my analysis is pretty good. But if they wanted to push back and say, well, you know, you're prescribing a lot of this, you know, stuff to Antifa, and I don't know that I buy all of it, that's okay. But at least be willing to engage. And neither Republicans or Democrats, frankly, are willing to engage on the topic. And it's really it's a little disheartening.
Democrats like to pretend that it doesn't really exist, and Republicans like to wish that it didn't exist or don't want to acknowledge it. They think that somehow it'll make it bigger. Maybe
treat it as part of the problem. Also, I think is the general. If I'm going to be sympathetic, I think some of it is the GOP's general deference to the law enforcement community, the FBI, on this topic. And the problem with that is law enforcement's understanding of these groups is really bad. If you look at the FBI's, first of all, they classify it as anarchist extremism, which is a domestic terror portfolio for the FBI. But because it's in a domestic silo, they don't check for foreign ties. And the reality is Antifa exists in multiple countries across the world. And they don't really, because they identify anarchist extremism as something that an individual person holds, they don't look for ties, they don't look for networks, they don't look for organizations, they don't try to understand ideological behavior. and these sorts of things. And so they get asked about it, and they have no real answer.
Is there a hierarchy? Because we're told that it's, you know, it's like when the Black Lives Matter protester killed those five police officers in Dallas a few years ago, we were told, well, he wasn't really an official member of the Black Lives Matter. And like, there's no membership card. You either show up or you don't show up. Is there a hierarchy in Antifa?
So the answer to that is yes and no. Antifa is a non-hierarchical organization, a non-hierarchical structure. It's organized into what they call affinity groups, which is really just means people that you know and trust who all agree to go do something, right? Which, if you were talking about international terrorism, you would call a cell, right? And then those affinity groups will meet with other affinity groups to form larger groups called clusters, and those clusters might form a chapter. Those chapters might join a regional network or an international network or what have you. So there's a structure in that sense. But is there any one particular individual who can say that I am the president of Antifa? No. And they'll mock you, right, and say, oh, you're saying that Antifa is an organization, but we're all anarchists, so that means we don't really have a structure and we don't have a boss, which is true. But as we saw in the Chaz, just because you're autonomous doesn't mean that somebody isn't in charge. And they you know, people who have strong personalities, people who are very capable, rise to the top. So what they'll do typically is they'll call for a block, right? A black block, which just means this sort of protest group where they're all wearing black and they're going out and destroying things or whatever. And a block might be what they would call an open block, which means that anybody who wants to join can join. So if you're a sort of a lefty and a hanger-on in these groups, right, you might say, I'm going to go grab my black sweatshirt and I'm going to go out and join. And if you're particularly hardcore and you really smash some stuff up, or you brain a guy pretty good, they'll be like, this guy's pretty cool. And they might bring you in, right? And then you start participating in more actions and that kind of thing. So I think of it as a little bit like Project Mayhem from the movie Fight Club, where the line is, you determine your own level of involvement. And I think that's true with Antifa, too.
But let me ask you this then, because I was going to ask you, how does one become a member or a trusted member to get it? It seems like you just throw up and be a complete idiot. And they're like, hey, that's our kind of idiot. Is there no... I imagine they have to be on guard, though, because I suspect everybody they think coming in is some sort of narc or undercover cop or FBI agent or something like that. There has to be a little bit more to it than that, or are they just fly by the seat of their pants type people?
No, not at all. They have a very serious security culture and they take it very seriously. You might think of it as, you know, you've got guys starting off that are sort of prospects, right? They're sort of hanging around. They may get told where the event's going to be towards the end of the action, so that they show up and they're an extra body, but they don't really know anything about the planning. And then if they do a good job, they show up a lot, they're hardcore, they may get invited to the organizing, right? Or they may say, hey, grab a couple of guys, form your own affinity group, right? Mm-hmm. So it is self-motivating in that way. Almost in the way that Islamic State might be called self-motivating, right? Where a particular guy says, I'm a jihadist, I'm going to go to work, and he does. And then Islamic State says, yeah, that guy's one of us. He did a good job. So in that sense, it's sort of open source that anyone can join. But as you get closer and closer to where the decisions are made, you see more and more structure. For example, a lot of the decision making, a lot of the leadership actually takes place in what I call Antifa support organizations. But these are pre-established organizations with national structure that are radical left, but not explicitly Antifa. I'm thinking here of Democratic Socialists of America, the International Workers of the World, Refuse Fascism, a couple of others, right? And these guys do a lot of the heavy lifting logistically, you know, handling bail money, figuring out all of those kinds of things. But then amongst that group, there are guys that are also part of Antifa that are doing the dirty work.
What do you think, as we wrap up here, if there's a parent out there going, holy shit, I hope my kid doesn't get involved in this. Are there signs? Is there a profile of somebody to watch your kid look out? They're listening to this type of music. They're dressing like this or whatever. They've got this book. Is there any sort of thing that people should be on the lookout for? If maybe their kid might be going down the wrong path here?
Yeah, I mean, so first of all, Antifa recruits young. They look at high schoolers. They look at college students. And this is something they picked up early on from groups like the Weather Underground. Right. They get them while they're young.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to, it's typically they're going to self-select from, guys that are already getting involved in pretty hardcore far left stuff. So a lot of your animal liberation guys, your sort of radical Earth First, liberation guys who are already sort of down with the direct action, but maybe they just aren't into the violence yet. They'll kind of recruit from that sort of thing. So, you know, I don't want to say, right, well, just because your son or daughter is reading Marx or some of these anarchist guys, that you need to think that they're going to become Antifa. But they self-select from people who have already moved down a spectrum of left-wing organizing and left-wing radical politics.
It's scary, scary stuff that I don't think enough people take seriously enough. I appreciate you letting us pick your brain today, Kyle Scheidler, of the Center for Security Policy, and really long job title.
Thank you, Derek.
Thanks to Kyle for that, and thanks to Liz for hooking me up with Kyle. You got to learn about Antifa. The media sure as hell isn't going to tell you. That's their team. It's their friends, their fans. Before we go, I want to talk about Oprah. Oprah is really something else. She has embraced the white privilege card. No, not for herself and her billions. She's worth about $2.5 billion. She's not embracing her white privilege and making money. She's embracing the concept of one thing Oprah is a weather vane on how to make money. She sure follows whatever is trendy and whatever can make her richer. And she's sitting on that pile of money. She released a video of announcing her new Book of the Month Club choice. It's a book called Cast, about the caste system in America based on race and how awful this country is and all that same bullshit that these leftists have been spewing forever. And Oprah is embracing it. She's embracing it full-throated. She's got a show, a conversation on Apple TV Plus. I don't know who's sitting there going, what I really need is more Oprah in my life. She released like 200 issues of her magazine, and every single issue had her ass on the cover. Oh, we got an interview with some big celebrity, but you got to have Oprah in the picture with you. Every magazine cover, there's Oprah. And if there's no celebrity with her, it's just Oprah. Like, okay, we get it. It's the magazine is called, oh, the Oprah magazine. We got it, Oprah. Are you so insecure that you've got to have your face on every issue of your magazine? Well, she released she came out with her latest episode of, like, the Conversations with Oprah or whatever. Haven't we heard enough from her? It's been, like, 40 years. We got it. You're going to take the left-wing side no matter what. Understood. In it, they were talking about white privilege. And you poor white people out there, and all the poor white people out there who are listening or not listening that just exist, you don't realize how good you've got it. Let the woman worth $2.5 billion tell you that, yes, you might be dirt poor and unemployed and uneducated because of a crappy public education system in Appalachia, but what you really don't realize is you've got it better than a black guy whose parents were doctors. That's who she was talking to, by the way. One of the people on her panel was a former NFL player who is now doing some sort of podcasting thing. I don't even know his name. I don't care what his name is. He's rich. He was the child of doctors. So he ain't exactly, he didn't grow up on the hard scramble streets of anywhere. And he is, he said that basically you had it better than him, poor white people, even though he had it pretty damn good. And Oprah steps in to give him this amen.
I was going to say, and then I'll let you answer it. White people, there are white people who are not as powerful as the system of white people, the caste system that's been put in place, but they still, no matter where they are on the rung or the ladder of success, they still have their whiteness.
Like, do you imagine that? Well, Oprah Winfrey, you still got your privilege. No matter how bad you've got it, you still got your privilege. Oh, all right. Well, rent is due. I don't have any money. My electricity is going to be cut off. My water is going to be cut off. But the black billionaire told me that I've got it good because of my skin color. So can I bust off a piece of my white privilege and pay my utility bills with that? I don't think so. Just shut the hell up. And is that too much to ask that these self-righteous liberals, they don't have to wrap themselves into every left-wing cause. They should have the self. Is there nobody on staff to say, hey, Oprah, you got it pretty good. You might not want to bitch too much about how oppressive the country is, considering this country made you a billionaire. And it was really only this country that you had a chance at all to go from growing up poor to becoming the richest woman or one of the richest women in the world. I think Jeff Bezos' ex-wife by divorce is the richest woman in the world. Just spare us this crap. You want to know why most people look at these liberals preaching at everybody about how oppressive this country is? Is because you got people like Oprah out there saying, yeah, you don't understand. Sure, you got a meth problem in rural America, and there are more poor white people than any other race in this country, any other group of people in this country. But what they don't secretly realize is as their teeth are falling out and they're going hungry tonight because of their chemical dependency, that they've got it pretty damn good because of the color of their skin. Shut the fuck up and go to hell, if you don't mind, Oprah. It's just stuff like that drives me nuts. It's so stupid. It's so self-indulgent. And Oprah has to have a really perverted worldview, which if you're a billionaire, you've definitely got a perverted worldview. But you've got to have a perverted worldview that you think that that is the way to go. The world needs to hear this from me. And I'm just the person to say it. One of the richest people on the planet. Let me tell you how bad I've got it. Shut up. But what you don't want to shut up about is the Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. He wants to make sure that the lucky winner is one of his top supporters. Be sure to enter soon because this is an opportunity you don't want to miss. This offer is only going to a select group of supporters, and you're one of them. All you have to do is text Derek to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's Derek to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for 4 more years. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. Enter, make sure you get your name in that hat. What do you got to lose? You could win a hat. That is all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. Thank Oprah for being a raging hypocrite and giving me a nice way to close out the program, and getting me to drop an F-bomb. And if you like F-bombs, you've got the patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast page. At midnight Friday, Saturday, I guess, at 12:01 is when I tend to post them. Is the next episode and the first episode for patrons only for the week in bleepin' review. It's the only way to get it, unless you bootleg it. Whatever. It's $5 a month. It won't break you, but it gets me working. That's my last day. I'm working every day of every week now. But that last one is very cathartic. It's like a primal scream for the political soul because I just let it all hang out. As these little, well, you'll have to tune in Saturday to find out who wins things like douchebag of the week or whatever it is. Whatever comes out of my mouth is what we'll talk about. And Lord knows we've got enough contenders this week. Patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast is where that will be. Hopefully you remember it and go check it out on Saturday. But go sign up now. Thanks for listening. Have a great Thursday. Tomorrow's Friday already. I have a great guest lined up for tomorrow, somebody with a new book. I don't want to say who it is because I'm still waiting for the confirmation email back, but it was confirmed earlier, and I've got their Skype, so I'll at least be calling them incessantly if nothing else. Maybe the whole show will be me just cursing them out for not answering their Skype. But you'll like it. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to Friday, too. Thanks for listening. I'll see you then.
I'm so forward looking to have an opportunity to sit with the president or stand with the president in debates.